Hello, and welcome to MRA, the Management Association's podcast on HR's role in preventing and addressing sexual harassment. I'm Lori Greenlees, manager of MRA's HR hotline, connecting with you in the wake of ongoing allegations, the hashtag MeToo movement, and a stream of firings of prominent figures across the nation. So what does this mean for employers and HR professionals and the people they employ? To tackle this workplace issue, joining me today are Mike Hyatt, an employee relations expert, Linnell Meath, a practice diversity and harassment prevention authority, and Lindsay Hoffman, a seasoned workplace learning and development professional.
Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Welcome to you all, and thank you for joining me for this important and compelling conversation. So, Linnell, are the stories we are hearing in the media limited to the entertainment industry, or do you believe sexual harassment is as problematic for traditional employers?
Well, I don't think it's limited at all to the entertainment industry. In fact, throughout my career, this has been a topic that as an HR professional, you know, we've seen 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, yesterday. So it definitely is something that all employers in general, it's been on the radar. And so definitely, I don't think it's limited to that area at all.
I think what we're seeing is that one person who felt comfortable enough to come forward is basically an open door for other people to start coming forward. So these things, as you can see, you know, they happened maybe several years ago and people were not comfortable enough to come forward. And so now it's becoming more popular, especially with the hashtag MeToo movement. People are starting to feel comfortable in that.
So ideally, employers really should strive to have a workplace that is free from harassment of any form. And there are several things that employers can do to foster that type of culture and environment, including harassment prevention training as well. So Lindsay, my question to you is, do you think that traditional harassment prevention training is effective?
So this question is actually brought up quite a bit. And so the reality is, I think it's really great for awareness. So it's bringing the attention to the topic and people are starting to think about it, but they're only thinking about it in the moment. So they get back to their job, they get back to work, and they start kind of doing their day-to-day tasks, and it's kind of long forgotten. And so I don't know that it's necessarily effective for impacting behavior change, but it's effective of creating awareness around the topic.
So how do you think employers can revamp their harassment prevention training so it is more effective?
Really, it comes down to focusing less on legal and the liability side. So employers are focused on what's the liability risk for them. Here are the definitions and all the things that we want you to know. But the reality is that's not changing anybody's actions and behaviors when they get back to work. And so that's really what we're trying to do. And so if I were to give you some suggestions on doing that, I would come up with probably three different things. One, disrupt your compliance training practices. It's not a one and done. So make sure that it's something that's a continual process. So don't think about it from I'm doing a one-hour training once a year. Think about it as an ongoing culture shift. Number two, don't be afraid to bring on an instructional designer or a contractor to help you assess what that would look like. You really need to define your needs as an organization and really understand what the culture that you are trying to convey really is. And so then you can have a training that's developed around those needs and really have a more impactful thing customized to your organization. And then I think the last thing to really think about is once you bring in an instructional designer and they're really evaluating that, you're going to go from that information transfer to behavioral change.
Thank you, Lindsay. We repeatedly hear that employees believe HR does not effectively address allegations of sexual harassment. Specifically, employees perceive that HR protects the employer and will therefore do nothing if they come forward to voice their concerns. Mike, why do you think that this perception exists?
I think the perception exists because employees often feel that they're not going to be heard. They're nervous about bringing forward these concerns. They're worried about their reputation. They're worried about promotional opportunities. They're worried about pay. HR's responsibility, though, is to look out for the best interests of the organization. And that's not always straightforward in the employee's mind. HR has to walk a very fine line between balancing the interests of the organization with the interests of management, as well as with the interests of employees. Oftentimes, employees think that they have the right to confidentiality. We as HR professionals have to promise confidentiality to the extent possible. And what that means is that you do need to address concerns with those folks who might have knowledge of the alleged incident. You might have to review documentation, and therefore you're going to have to make other people aware of that situation. Employees often are uncomfortable hearing that. But once you let them know that you, A, appreciate that they brought it forward, that you're going to treat it seriously, that they're concerns are going to remain confidential to the extent possible, and that you're going to look to resolve it quickly and only involve people on a need to know, they eventually become more comfortable.
Thanks, Mike. So, Linnell, what are your thoughts on how HR can change that perception and ensure employees feel safe and comfortable raising these issues?
When I think about that, there's like three things that immediately pop to mind, one in which Mike talked about, and that's keeping confidences. It's really important in HR that the employee feels that when they are bringing a concern to them, a complaint, that there's a trust there, that HR is not going to be sharing that information unless the person they're sharing it with has that business need to know. So keeping confidences is a huge, huge factor in building trust. So that's my number one. I guess number two would be responding to complaints that come forward or concerns. That can be a challenge sometimes. You know, as HR professionals, we've got a lot going on. So you're wrestling with all of that and saying, okay, well, you know, do I need to respond to this right away? And to really be able to say every single complaint has to stand on its own merits and has to be looked into. Number three would be just that timely communication of any outcome. So an individual comes in and says, you know, I have this concern. And, you know, for HR professionals to go back to them and let them know that it has been looked into, it has been addressed, that really helps from the individual standpoint to trust HR.
So if we think about, it's the responsibility of the HR to handle things professionally, right?
Yes.
And so people are bringing these things to you. But the reality is it's also up to them to decide when they have the authority or it's right for them to actually participate in that investigation. Is this a time when you have to bring in a third party investigator to help you? Are you in a situation where you can remain objective? Do you have a relationship with any of the people that are involved? You want to make sure that the employee who's providing the complaint feels comfortable that they're going to have a thorough investigation. And so sometimes that means bringing in a third party person to handle all those pieces, as well as having the investigation interviews at a different physical location.
That's an excellent point. You know, oftentimes HR, you might be in an organization for many, many years. You know a lot of the employees. An HR professional should never feel as though bringing in a third party in any way, shape, or form gives the appearance that they're less than credible, that they're not able to handle it. Yes, you are able to handle it, but sometimes it's more appropriate to bring in a third party neutral investigator. So that goes very well. So I totally agree with you.
So following up with your recommendations, Linnell and Lindsay, regarding a third-party investigator, who might you turn to for assistance in that investigation?
Yeah, I guess a third-party, we should clarify, isn't, you know, somebody off the street. Like, hey, you're a third-party, come on in. So it really should be someone that is trained and could be someone who provides these kinds of investigative services. MRA obviously is a resource that has trained investigators that can be used, but also attorneys can be used. I guess the biggest thing is to know that there are resources out there and to vet those out carefully because they really need to be trained.
Good. So let's take a minute or two just to switch gears and talk a little bit about workplace culture, as I think that an organization's culture makes all the difference when it comes to workplace ethics and conduct. So Mike and Linnell, what steps can HR and other leaders within the organization take to create a workplace culture where employees are comfortable, safe, and productive, and the environment's free from sexual harassment?
Yeah, thanks for that, Lori. I'll tell you, I often believe that the tone set from the top, how your leadership behaves, how your leadership communicates its values, it's how it's carried out every single day. Management setting the tone of how they're going to handle these matters, having a consistent process in place, showing by their actions that they are not going to retaliate against people who bring forward concerns is the name of the game. And it's all about showing from the top what respectful workplace behavior looks like.
Yeah, and I think people, they want to come to work. They want to do a good job. They want to feel safe. They want to feel welcomed. So the steps that HR leaders can do to help create more of an open workplace culture is really be in tune to good communication, good conflict resolution. Get people to have that respect and transparency. Some may have heard me say this before, but there's no, you know, misunderstanding has ever been resolved by Snapchat or instant messaging or an email. So you're not going to resolve misunderstandings and miscommunications that way. You got to get face to face and get people to talk through things.
So we have heard from the EEOC about the increase in retaliation claims over recent years, and oftentimes retaliation claims go hand in hand with harassment claims as well. So let's talk about how HR can maintain civility in the workplace once a complaint has been lodged. So Mike, starting with you, what do you think HR can do to make the complainant comfortable, address the alleged behavior while still maintaining confidentiality?
I think we have to understand first and foremost where the complainant is coming. Typically, they don't wake up one day and just say, I'm going to go file a complaint of sexual harassment with HR. They've thought about it quite a bit. They've weighed whether or not they choose to do it. And these stories are getting highlighted repeatedly in the media that people are coming out weeks, if not months, if not years later because they were uncomfortable or didn't think anything was going to be done. People are very, very concerned about bringing these forward because of the threat of career suicide, whether that's real or perceived. So knowing that and having empathy to realize that people don't come and bring these allegations lightly is first and foremost. Recognizing that and really showing appreciation that you are thankful that they brought these concerns forward so the company has the opportunity to address it.
Thanks, Mike. Linnell, what about your thoughts? Are there other steps employers can take to minimize retaliation claims during the investigation process?
Yeah, so I think one of the things to help kind of minimize that possibility is really informing all of those involved that retaliation is a violation of the policy. So it's taken seriously if retaliation does occur, that there are consequences to that. And it's really important to actually explain to the employees what retaliation could look like out in the workplace. So it could be like false rumors or transfer, disciplinary action, given a different work schedule that's undesirable or undesirable tasks. It could be demotion. So it's important for individuals to recognize like, oh, these are actions that could be potential retaliation. So if this comes up, I need to come back and let HR know.
Great. So as we begin to wrap up this insightful conversation, I want to pose one closing question to each of you. So what one thing do you want employers to walk away with from this discussion today? So let's start with you, Lindsay.
Yeah, definitely. So with harassment prevention training, I want to kind of morph that and disrupt that and change it from being harassment prevention training to creating a respectful workplace. So thinking about a behavior that you want to actually take place, shifting it to saying this is what we want you to do versus saying this is what we don't want you to do, it has a more positive feel. It's a process. It's not a one and done. It's not a one time a year we're going to do this compliance training and be done with it. I want you to think of it as an ongoing process from an educational standpoint. So you're constantly making employees aware of what they need to know, educating them on the process on how to do things, and maybe consistently having some sort of event or some sort of awareness opportunity, whether it be a lunch and learn, whether it be a webinar, whether it be other ways for them to get that information. Make sure that it's available to them throughout the year.
Thanks, Lindsay. And Mike, how about you? What's your one key takeaway?
A lot of what we learned 20 years ago still applies. It's sometimes just a very good reminder to remember that it's okay to let the person know that they believe the conduct is unwelcome. I also want to remind people that the employee and the alleged harasser can either be male or female. Males can harass males as well as females can harass females, and women can harass men. But there are many different types of relationships where that will happen.
Good points. Linnell, any key takeaways you'd like to share?
Yeah, I guess mine would be take a look around your organization and just see how individuals are behaving towards one another. One of the things I was thinking about that really hadn't come up too much before in our conversation was about this kind of bystander education and intervention and really encouraging communication in organizations. So if you see something, say something. Go to HR and have that be a part of your workplace culture where it's okay to do that.
Thank you, Linnell, and thank you to all of our listeners for joining our podcast. And thank you to Mike, Lindsay, and Linnell for sharing your thoughts and expertise on sexual harassment. Starting the conversation is sometimes a first step in bringing about positive change. I hope our listeners have found our podcast helpful and have gleaned some actionable items. MRA, the Management Association, is here to help, and we invite you to contact us at mranet.org if you need assistance with harassment prevention training, investigations, sample policies, or simply to ask questions.